Imagine discovering that your family once ruled a kingdom, not in some distant land, but right here in America. This is the revelation at the heart of Dolan Perkins Valdez's captivating novel, Happy Land, which weaves together past and present to tell the story of the Kingdom of the Happy Land, a real post-Civil War black community established by formerly enslaved people in the Blue Ridge Mountains. Oprah Winfrey called it a powerful meditation on freedom, family, and the meaning of home, while the New York Times praised its unforgettable characters who embody the resilience of black Americans. The novel has gained particular relevance amid growing awareness of how systemic discrimination has stripped black Americans of their land, an estimated $326 billion in wealth lost between 1910 to 1997. Through the intertwined stories of Queen Luella and her modern-day descendant Nikki, Perkins Valdez invites us to consider what it truly means to claim one's birthright. Nikki arrives at her grandmother, Mother Rita's, isolated home in the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina with mixed feelings. Despite being nearly 40, this is her first visit to her grandmother's house. Their relationship is strained. They've only met a handful of times throughout Nikki's life. Mother Rita wasn't expecting Nikki until evening and seems put out by her early arrival, though she offers leftover navy beans and cornbread. Life hasn't been kind to Nikki lately. Her daughter Shawnee is unemployed after high school graduation, her real estate career is faltering, and her savings are dwindling. She came because Mother Rita insisted, promising to tell her everything your mama hasn't told you about our family. As Nikki observes her grandmother's home and habits, including her refusal to use a microwave, she realizes how little she knows about her own family history. The tension between them is palpable. Mother Rita persistently calls her Veronica, despite her preference for Nikki, highlighting the disconnect between them. When questioned directly about why she summoned Nikki and what happened between her and Nikki's mother, Mother Rita deflects, promising answers in due time. The final split between Nikki's mother and Mother Rita happened shortly after Nikki's father died. Her mother, once a meticulous accountant, became unraveled by grief. A few months after his death, she visited unexpectedly to announce, "Your grandmother isn't in our lives anymore," explaining that Mother Rita had told her, "Don't ever put my finger on the phone and call her ever again," but refused to explain why. Nikki never called Mother Rita herself, but kept wondering about her mother's choice of words, "our lives?" Mother Rita questions Nikki about her mother Laurel, revealing a lingering connection despite their estrangement. When Nikki mentions reading, Mother Rita proudly claims to read 50 books annually, despite never attending college, and offers Nikki her spare library card. Then comes the revelation that changes everything. Mother Rita introduces Nikki to local history, specifically mentioning the Kingdom of the Happy Land, a real post-slavery black community where they currently live, ruled by Mother Rita's great-grandparents. "Your ancestors were royalty," Mother Rita tells her. "The Kingdom of the Happy Land was real, and your great-great-great-grandmother Luella Bobo was a natural-born leader from a South Carolina plantation." Nikki is skeptical, but intrigued by this family history her mother never shared. When she suggests researching this history during a future visit, Mother Rita cryptically warns it will be too late by fall. Their conversation grows heated when Nikki presses about the feud with her mother. Mother Rita calls her mother a Judas, but refuses to explain further, claiming the truth starts with Luella. As Nikki explores the property, she discovers the family graveyard with its unmarked stones, nearly 30 graves with only her grandfather's properly marked. While birdwatching, she gets lost and is given a ride home by a neighbor named Al, who cryptically asks if she's helping her grandmother pack up. Mother Rita reacts coldly to learning Fred Thomas's boy, calling his family snakes. At the Henderson County Public Library, Nikki researches her family history, searching for information about Kingdom Happy Land. Brian, Mother Rita's librarian friend, confirms that the kingdom was real, describing it as one of several black intentional communities in America. He provides examples like Mound Bayou in Mississippi and Coe Ridge Colony on the Kentucky-Tennessee border and helps Nikki access historical documents about her ancestors. The story shifts back to 1850, introducing us to Luella Bobo, born on a South Carolina plantation called Lily of the Valley. Despite being forbidden from touching the books in her master's library, she was determined to teach herself to read. After emancipation, Luella joined a group of formerly enslaved people who traveled north to the Blue Ridge Mountains, where they established a community that would become the Kingdom of the Happy Land. Under the leadership of William Montgomery, the group settled on land owned by the widow Davis, repairing her inn and working her fields in exchange for living in the old slave quarters. They began building proper houses, considering sunlight and drainage, and laying out their settlement strategically. At their entrance, they built a fence with "private" painted on it, a sign Luella would stop to spell out letter by letter, savoring each one. Building walls brought us joy that only those who'd been treated as less than human could understand, Luella recalls. Working together healed our souls in those early months. William and Luella married, and he was crowned king while she became queen. But their relationship was complicated. William embraced his position immediately, proudly wearing a frock coat with gold buttons, but he could also be cruel. When Luella complained about having to wear her crown, he struck her across the face, her first experience of violence in their relationship. Though he apologized through gentle deeds afterward, she carried the hurt silently. After 2 years of marriage without conceiving a child, Luella channeled her energy into establishing a school for the community's children. She secured one speller from a white schoolteacher and eventually obtained slates and additional teachers. But when she suggested building a proper schoolhouse, William cruelly reminded her she couldn't even bear him a child. 1 week later, William left to work in the mines, promising to return, but disappearing from her life. That evening, Mother Rita reveals her true motive for bringing Nikki to Happy Land. Their family's land was stolen 20 years ago, and she wants Nikki's real estate expertise to help reclaim it. In the middle of the night, Mother Rita wakes Nikki complaining of feeling unwell, and Nikki drives her to the hospital. After hours of waiting, Mother Rita is admitted and reveals she has cancer that started in her lymph nodes. Despite being told she has months to live, Mother Rita remains determined to fight for her land. Meanwhile, back in the 19th century, Luella's life takes another turn when William's brother Robert arrives at the kingdom. In William's absence, Robert is chosen as the new king, and he and Luella gradually develop feelings for each other. Robert supports Luella's ideas, including her proposal for the women to create and sell liniment made from mountain herbs. This business venture becomes successful, providing income for the community. By 1878, the kingdom had grown to over 100 people. After 5 years of hard work, Robert announced they had enough money to buy land from the widow Davis. He suggested putting half in Luella's name, a shocking proposal that filled her with pride. The widow offered them 205 acres spanning both Carolinas for $200. The council agreed to deed the South Carolina portion to Robert and the North Carolina portion to Luella. That night, celebration drums echoed throughout the kingdom, Luella remembers, especially from women delighted to see land in a woman's name. Nikki visits R.J. Parker, a lawyer with her own family connection to the kingdom through the Caseys. R.J. explains the devastating reality of heirs' property laws, how black Americans lost nearly 90% of their land in the 20th century through predatory practices when distant relatives sold shares without others' permission. She delivers the crushing news. Mother Rita's 50 acres would be worth millions today, but once sold, the land is legally gone forever. Mother Rita explains that the original property straddled North and South Carolina. Half was registered in Robert Montgomery's name in South Carolina, while the other half was in Luella's name in North Carolina. She insists this oral history, passed down through generations, is reliable, even if it can't be found in libraries. Mother Rita believes Luella wouldn't have allowed their land to be taken. Determined to see the kingdom's remnants and speak with Al Thomas about stopping her grandmother's eviction, Nikki visits his home. Al takes her in his four-wheeler to see what remains of the kingdom, a two-story wooden palace where the king and queen lived, a clearing where they once farmed, and the remains of a chimney from the schoolhouse. Standing in the palace, Nikki feels deeply connected to her ancestors, understanding what they gained, lost, and sacrificed. When she confronts Al about the eviction, he reveals they inherited the land 8 years ago, but only recently decided to sell. Despite her pleas to let Mother Rita stay until her death, he refuses, claiming his brother needs the money. In the 19th century, Luella's carefully constructed life shatters when William makes his unexpected return, appearing on her doorstep, thin, white-haired, and partially blind from years of working in dangerous mining conditions. The revelation that he'd spent years laboring in treacherous silver mines specifically to earn money for her dream of building a schoolhouse, information Robert had deliberately withheld, forces her to reevaluate everything she thought she knew about both brothers. Despite the turmoil of emotions ranging from anger to pity to lingering affection, Luella makes the difficult decision to offer William shelter in their home, acknowledging both their past connection and his current vulnerability. The household's delicate balance shifts dramatically as William moves in, sharing a small room with Luella and Robert's young son, Wade. The situation becomes even more complex when Luella discovers she's pregnant again, adding another layer of complexity to their already strained domestic arrangement. The physical proximity forces all of them to confront unresolved feelings and shared history that can no longer be ignored. The tension between the brothers builds steadily, manifesting in subtle power struggles and pointed silences, until Robert finally confronts Luella with the question that has been haunting him: are you my wife or his? This forces Luella to examine her feelings for both men. As she spends time with William, she finds herself experiencing a renewed tenderness toward her first husband, seeing him not as the young man who abandoned her, but as someone who sacrificed everything for her dreams, even if misguided in his execution. In the present-day narrative, Nikki arrives at Mother Rita's house to find her mother's familiar car already in the driveway, setting the stage for a momentous family reunion. Inside, she discovers Mama and Mother Rita sitting in tense silence at the kitchen table, years of unspoken grievances hanging heavy in the air. The atmosphere shifts dramatically when Mother Rita spots Shawnee, her face lighting up as she embraces her great-granddaughter with unconditional love, bringing unexpected tears to Nikki's eyes as she witnesses four generations of Lovejoy women gathered together for the first time. However, the warmth of the reunion quickly dissolves into confrontation when Mama demands answers about Mother Rita's concealed cancer diagnosis. Their argument rapidly escalates, peeling back layers of long-buried family history. Mother Rita's accusation that Mama sold her down the river and stood idle while they robbed us of their ancestral land reveals deep-seated pain and betrayal. Mama's dismissal of the kingdom stories as cockamamie tales lacking concrete evidence only serves to deepen the rift, highlighting the fundamental disconnect between different generations' understanding of their family legacy and what constitutes truth versus fantasy in their shared history. In the 1890s, the peaceful existence of the Mountain Kingdom was shattered when Luella's son Wade faced false accusations of releasing bulls that trampled a white farmer to death. The incident marked a devastating turning point. Despite their careful isolation, the racial violence and injustice plaguing the post-Reconstruction South had finally breached their sanctuary. Robert, who had been working in nearby towns, immediately returned to help, understanding the gravity of a black man facing criminal charges in that era. Together, they sought out a lawyer named Weaver, a shrewd businessman who agreed to defend Wade, but at a steep price, the kingdom's land deed as collateral. After heated debates and anguished discussions, the Kingdom Council reluctantly agreed to the arrangement, with the stipulation that Robert and Luella would bear sole responsibility for raising funds to reclaim the deed within 2 years. The trial itself was a mere formality, a performance of justice rather than its execution. Despite Weaver's competent defense and multiple witnesses attesting to Wade's whereabouts during the incident, the all-white jury took less than 2 hours to return a guilty verdict. Wade received a 2-year prison sentence, but the true punishment extended far beyond his imprisonment. The Kingdom not only lost its cherished son, but also its foundation, the land they had cultivated for nearly 3 decades. Weaver, revealing his true intentions, demanded their immediate evacuation to make way for white tenants, showing no regard for the community they had built. In the fall of 1894, the unthinkable happened. After 28 years of freedom and self-sufficiency, the residents of the Mountain Kingdom were forced to abandon their haven. Luella's pain echoes through her recollections. "We lost our land and our son, everything. That night, we slept restlessly, our dreams filled with memories of birdsong, purple flowers, service berries, and the sacred quiet of our mountain refuge. The displacement felt like a second enslavement, stripping them of the security and dignity they had fought so hard to establish." Following Wade's release, Luella and Robert made one final attempt to reclaim their heritage, visiting Weaver's office with hope in their hearts. However, Weaver's asking price proved deliberately prohibitive, a calculated move to permanently separate them from their land. On the somber ride home, Robert proposed borrowing money, but Luella's careful calculations revealed they could only afford 50 acres, just enough for the original settlement with its modest houses, life-giving stream, and sacred graveyard where their ancestors rested. In a moment of profound resilience, Luella found strength in acceptance. 50 acres is still more than what we came up here with," she declared, her voice steady despite the loss. 50 acres is enough to make a life. We hold on to it and never let it go again. We still free." Her words carried both the weight of their losses and an unshakable determination to preserve what remained of their hard-won freedom. On the crisp autumn morning of the court hearing, the Lovejoy women dress with careful attention to detail. Mother Rita in her finest church dress, Mama in a conservative suit, and Nikki in professional attire that feels foreign against her skin. The weight of generations rests on their shoulders as they prepare to face the judge. RJ arrives early, her legal briefcase bulging with documents, and explains she's representing them pro bono because of her deep connection as Doris Casey's granddaughter. Her strategy centers on emphasizing Mother Rita's profound multi-generational ties to the land, hoping to convince the judge to grant an extended stay of eviction. The tension builds as Mother Rita insists on presenting her royal lineage, her direct descent from Queen Luella Montgomery, as part of their defense. Mama's objections are immediate and forceful, worried that such claims will undermine their credibility in court. Their heated exchange echoes through the house, each woman defending her position until Mother Rita, tears glistening in her eyes, retreats to her bedroom where the morning light catches the old photographs of her ancestors on the wall. In the tense quiet that follows, Mama reveals a devastating truth to Nikki. The family home she'd hoped to leverage is underwater financially. There's no equity to extract, crushing Nikki's carefully constructed plan to purchase the disputed property outright. The revelation leaves them both feeling helpless until RJ presents an unexpected lifeline, adverse possession law, a centuries-old legal doctrine she's uncovered in her research. RJ explains that North Carolina law recognizes squatters' rights under specific conditions. If someone openly occupies property for 20 years, maintains and improves it, pays taxes on it, and treats it as their own without permission from the legal owner, they can claim title. Mother Rita's continuous residence since Fred Thomas's death, her meticulous care of the garden, her payment of utilities, and her unwavering belief in her right to the land all align perfectly with these requirements. The legal proceedings stretch over 8 weeks of anxious waiting, during which Mother Rita tends her garden with renewed vigor, as if each planted seed strengthens their claim to the soil. Finally, the judge delivers his ruling. Mother Rita is granted clear title to 4 acres, encompassing the weathered house that holds their memories, the abundant garden that has fed generations, the sacred ground of the family cemetery, and the valuable road frontage that connects them to the wider world. Later that evening, as sunset paints the sky in shades of purple and gold, Nikki finds Mother Rita on the porch. When she asks if her grandmother is satisfied with winning just 4 acres instead of the entire property, Mother Rita pulls her into a tight embrace. The question is, "Are you happy, Nikki?" she whispers, her voice full of knowing. "You know, 4 acres is enough to make a life." In that moment, Nikki finally understands the truth that had eluded her. Her grandmother's fierce battle was never just about the land itself, but about securing a future for her granddaughter, a place where Nikki could finally put down roots if she chose to stay. In the 19th century, though they lost part of the kingdom, Luella and Robert regained their homes by Christmas. Some residents returned, including Luella's friend Jola and her brother's family. Luella's daughter Sunny and her husband Vernon moved back, with Sunny now pregnant. Wade, still walking with a limp from his time in the labor camp, found joy on kingdom land, despite his sad eyes. "I came to appreciate both Montgomery brothers differently now. Robert, my lover, William, my friend," Luella reflects. "Sometimes I'd walk the property alone, remembering the purple flowers, the morning sounds of settlement life, and the council meetings under moonlight, carrying hope that my descendants would create something even better from what we started." In the present day, the Lovejoy family welcomes 85 kingdom descendants to their property for a reunion. Nikki is tasked with telling the kingdom's story, beginning with Mother Rita, who fought to hold on to their family land. Her grandmother made it to Christmas as she wished, then passed quietly in her sleep before the new year. Standing before their gathered family, Nikki shares their impossible-sounding but true history. How their ancestors walked up this mountain in 1873 to create a better life. She tells them about the kingdom of the Happy Land, how Luella and her husbands were declared royalty, how they established a communal treasury and purchased 200 acres, landowners and caretakers of their futures who made their gathering possible. After the gathering, Mama shows Nikki a field of purple flowers called Veronica, her birth name, chosen as a signal to Mother Rita that Mama still loved her. At 40, Nikki makes a promise to herself to read more books, plant flowers, and be the great-great-great-granddaughter of Queen Luella's dreams, walking in the footsteps left by those who stepped from their past into their future. The Kingdom of the Happy Land represents a largely forgotten chapter of American history, one of many Black intentional communities established after emancipation. These communities weren't just places to live, they were bold experiments in self-governance, economic independence, and cultural preservation at a time when such freedoms were actively suppressed. What makes this story particularly powerful is how it connects past and present. The struggles faced by Luella and her community, securing land, establishing education, building economic independence, and protecting their families from violence, echo through generations to Mother Rita and Nikki. The novel shows how historical injustices continue to shape modern lives, while also highlighting the resilience and ingenuity that allow communities to survive and sometimes thrive despite overwhelming obstacles. Perhaps most importantly, Happy Land reminds us that knowing our history, especially the parts that have been erased or marginalized, can transform how we see ourselves and our possibilities. When Nikki discovers she's descended from royalty, it changes not just her understanding of the past, but her vision for the future. As Brian tells the kingdom descendants at their reunion, "There is power in knowing." In a time when discussions about reparations, land reclamation, and historical justice are increasingly prominent, this novel offers a deeply personal window into what's at stake. It's not just about property or money, but about identity, dignity, and the right to determine one's own destiny. 4 acres might not seem like much, but as both Luella and Mother Rita understand, it can be enough to make a life, especially when that life is built on the foundation of knowing who you are and where you come from.